Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada, and happy NBA restart day to you all out there. Again, hard to believe we've actually gotten to this point where NBA is back, and it's going to be a busy three-day stretch, really, for sports. We have MLS is back. Quarterfinals happening today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Obviously, starting today, we're going to have basketball games essentially every day now coming down the stretch of that season and into the postseason. Hockey also starts up again on Saturday. So a lot about to be going on, and it's going to be an NBA-heavy show. We'll talk both conferences. We'll start in the West. But like I said, hard to believe that we've gotten to this point with the NBA going through its scrimmages, and I was not completely sold on them having scrimmages just in case there was some outbreak that, you know, now you've put yourself in a tough position at the start of the season. But it appears as though that is not the case. And we get set for a doubleheader tonight. We have the New Orleans Pelicans taking on the Utah Jazz. And then a battle of L.A. as the Lakers and Clippers go up against each other there as well in the second game of the doubleheader. So it should be a very entertaining night of really Western Conference basketball, because that's where all four of those teams are, and that's where a majority of those teams are playing out of. I mean, let's start with the West. If we're going to look at some of these teams or some of these, if we're going to look at both conferences and see how both conferences are approaching the season, obviously, a little more going on out West. 13 of the 22 teams competing in the restart are coming out of the Western Conference. Gives that phrase, the Wild West, a little bit more meaning to it. But the top six teams are locked in to the playoffs. So the Lakers, the Clippers, Denver, Utah, Oklahoma City, and Houston, in that order, are currently the six teams in the West that have their playoff tickets punched. And we really have seven teams now battling for two spots, although Dallas is sitting in seventh, seven games clear of eighth place there. So really, unless Dallas just has a unbelievable collapse, it comes down to six teams fighting for one spot. You have Memphis currently holding that eighth seed, but only 3.5 games, by only 3.5 games, over Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento. And remember, if the ninth place team is within four games, so if any of those three teams are 3.5 games behind or better when it comes to chasing down Memphis, then they will have that playoff series between the eighth and ninth seed. Same thing out east as well. There just aren't as many teams chasing the spot out east. So you have those three teams, Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento, that are all within 3.5 games of Memphis. Then you have San Antonio, who is four games back, so technically they're still in that window as well if they were to climb up and get to that ninth seed to forcing a play-in series. Then you have Phoenix, the final team, which is six games back, so they still have a little more work to do, not only in catching the other teams chasing that eighth seed, but they also have to shave some games off of that games back deficit there, because if they end up getting to six, but they're still five or six games back, doesn't matter. That's not going to be enough to constitute a play-in series. So a little more to watch in terms of that chase for the eighth seed there in the Western Conference. And hopefully, I mean, that lives up to it, because I don't know how much pushing we're really going to see from any of those six teams that have clinched their playoff spot already. Obviously, you want the best seed you can get, but you also don't want to push these guys on this restart so much that they're not there for that playoff run. So teams one through six, you know, those six teams that I listed, Lakers, Clippers, Denver, Utah, OKC, and Houston, I'm not sure how much we'll get from those six. So really it's going to be, and really from Dallas as well. I mean, Dallas hasn't clinched their playoff spot yet, but like I said, seven games up right now, I believe, on eighth place on Memphis. So they're looking relatively comfortable still, but we might not see as much pushing out of them either. So we really might be looking to those teams chasing that eighth seed to provide most of the entertainment in the West before we get to the playoffs and those teams, all those teams, crank it up to 11. But there are some interesting questions out West. One, will Ja Morant continue his rise through the Western Conference? I believe he will. He's already become one of the most, you know, must-watch players for that Grizzlies team. And being in that eighth spot, they will need to be able to kind of rely on him to be that spark and that rock for the team as they look to kind of avoid play-in games. And possibly, you know, could give us an absolutely scintillating first-round matchup with the LA Lakers. But Ja Morant is one of those guys that, you know, with some of the talented rookies and young guys in the NBA right now, he didn't fly completely under the radar, but he was not getting nearly as much attention as some of the other guys, like a Zion Williamson or whoever else, you know, as a part of those that young rookie core that's come into the NBA. But Ja Morant has wasted no time, you know, taking center stage there for Memphis and becoming the guy that fans and that team can really glob onto. And he's got that just, you know, intensity that draws you in from an NBA player. And the alley-oop that he got, I mean, a few that he got in the scrimmage games, he's just one of those guys that's incredibly fun to watch. Although he might not have the build like a Zion does, he still has all the hops and all the talent to be able to put on an unbelievable show for you in the NBA. So I'm looking forward to the way Ja Morant can continue to lead that Memphis team, because again, he can be that guy to provide that spark, whether it's in transition or a quick three or a big slam dunk that gets the bench hype. He can be that guy, but he can also be the guy to kind of calm everybody down and really be the voice. And I think he's done that a little bit already, but I think he can continue to grow in that and even more so in this environment that they're walking into with the bubble and you know, having these seeding games, as they're referring to them, and then the playoffs. So I think as they continue to defend their eighth seed, and who knows, if Memphis really does get hot and Dallas doesn't push it as much, maybe we see Memphis jump up to the seventh seed. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's completely out of the question. It's going to be a stretch, but that would be a heck of a run for Memphis, and if they do piece it together and are able to do that, look to Ja Morant for being the main reason why. And I can't wait to see how he continues to grow throughout this playoff and seeding environment the NBA has to end off this season. And speaking of Zion, can he really help lead New Orleans to the playoffs? The Pelicans being one of those teams that is right there, 3.5 games back of Memphis, so they're within that playoff or play-in series limit of being four games back. And honestly, if he stays healthy, I think he can absolutely lead them to the playoffs. He's a game-time decision, as we heard there at the top of the hour for the Pelicans opener tonight against the Jazz. But if he can stay healthy, then I think there's a good enough support staff around him for the Pelicans to make the playoffs. You got guys like J.J. Redick. You got guys like Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram. There is a lot of potential around this Pelicans team, but they need a healthy Zion to help spread that defense, you know, really make them commit. Are you going to try and stop that young man from attacking the rim? If so, you're going to have, you know, open shots for guys like J.J. Redick and Lonzo Ball on the outside. And if they're not going to, you know, apply a lot of defensive pressure to Zion, if they're going to let him go one-on-one, he's going to destroy people underneath the basket. So if Zion Williamson is healthy, then I think New Orleans can absolutely make a playoff run. And, again, they would most likely be the eighth seed, so you're looking at a matchup against the Lakers, which I don't think anybody in the world of basketball would not want to see a LeBron James and Zion Williamson playoff matchup there in the first round. And, you know, it would be interesting about that. If Zion Williamson and New Orleans can make the playoffs this year, then Zion would actually beat LeBron James and Shaq in terms of how many seasons it took to get to the playoffs. Because Shaq did it for the first time in his second year. LeBron, I believe, did it for the first time in his third year. So if Zion can pull it off in his rookie year, that would be quite the feat for him. And again, there's plenty of talent around that team. They just have to get into a rhythm and hope that Zion can stay healthy. And if both those things happen, watch out for the Pelicans out west, because they could be an eighth seed, and I don't think they would be a walkover by any means for a Lakers team if they're the number one seed. So I think that if Zion stays healthy, New Orleans can make a run through the playoffs there. And then an interesting duo to watch as the NBA season gets restarted. Obviously, Utah in action tonight against New Orleans, and you really wonder if Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert can coexist. I think they will, but no more than they really have to. You know, there have been reports that said the two have kind of talked it out, they've hashed it out, they've made up, and they're essentially good to go. But you don't know how that's really going to, you know, transfer over to the court. You don't know if they're really going to be able to be on the same page, be able to have a conversation without it getting personal, without the two kind of snapping at each other. So I think they'll be cordial towards each other, but nothing more than that, nothing too over the top. And really the good news is, if there is any friction, Utah is already cemented into the playoff field. So if it takes a little time for them to get back on the same page and feel each other out a little bit, they have some time to play with there. So while I don't think it'll be a huge issue, because they've had plenty of time to hash it out already. I mean, not only before they got to the bubble, but since being in the bubble and getting used to that atmosphere and going through scrimmages and getting ready for the season. I mean, if they haven't gotten to a place where they can be on the same court by now, not only is it on them, it's on the team as well. I mean, coaching staffs, teammates, everyone's got to try and get these guys on the same page if you really want to make a playoff run. Because your two most, influential players on that team cannot be going head-to-head or butting heads when you're trying to make a playoff run. So, like I said, I think it'll be cordial, nothing over the top, and Utah will try to mind its P's and Q's and then get ready for a playoff push there in the Western Conference. Another big man, though, that is making some or catching some attention, right, getting some eyeballs on him is Bol Bol there for Denver, a young man that is freakishly tall. Another one of those guys that can almost step or touch the rim without even stepping a foot like off the ground. It's crazy. And those, it's just those type of wing. When you see the guys like that, that just, show you that wingspan, it's jaw dropping. But not only is that jaw dropping, the guy got 9 blocks in the few scrimmages that they've played. He shot 35% from beyond the arc and also showed off some nifty ball handling. This is a guy that's over 7 feet tall. And he's doing guard moves out there with the basketball. So, I mean, the big question becomes durability. Obviously, he's tall, but he's not necessarily a filled out young man. So we'll be, it'd be interesting to see if he can get any kind of rhythm put together with Nikola Jokic down there under the basket for Denver. But either way, I mean, he can bring something to that floor, even if he's not, knocking down maybe as many 3-pointers as he was. That threat that he produces and that defensive threat that he produces being around the basket is unbelievable. I mean, he blocked 9 shots just in the few scrimmages that they had. I don't know what this guy's going to do when they get into actual games. And if he can, play a good amount. Again, durability is going to be a question. You probably don't want to have him out there for, more than 10, 12 minutes as this season restarts. But he's shown that he can be a very unique asset to this team, and hopefully they can continue to kind of develop him and try to get some kind of rhythm set up between him and Jokic down low. And if they can do that, then this team is in a good position. Again, Denver, having their playoff ticket punched already, they're in a position to where if they want to take those first few games and try to get Jokic and Bol Bol there into some rhythm and into some good teamwork, it could be very well worth it in the long run as you get into the playoffs. But definitely fun to watch him, turning heads on the internet and through social media. So can't wait to see what he can do there and what Denver will try to do with him as they go into this NBA restart. Then finally, as I talked about, the other game going on tonight, opening up the NBA restart, is the Lakers and Clippers. And a lot of people thinking this is going to be a Western Conference Finals preview. And honestly, most likely, it probably will be. We can't say for sure, and it looks like, we're not going to get the star-studded lineup from either team tonight. But nonetheless, I mean, these two teams have been strong and top West contenders all season long. And really, this is a game that we've kind of been waiting for. I mean, it's been postponed twice. It was first postponed for the unfortunate death of Kobe Bryant, and then it was postponed when the season got put on hold. So this is a matchup that not only has been brewing throughout the restart, but really has been brewing even back, in January when the season was still happening. So at a regular pace. So this is going to be an interesting game between both teams. But again, they've both been Western Conference contenders all season. So even though, like I said, we're not going to see the full regime from either of those two teams tonight, they still feel like they're the best two in the conference. And I mean, really, not that Western Conference teams are far off of them, but there's been a feel that the Lakers and the Clippers, especially as the Clippers have kind of picked up pace throughout the season before we got into the halt of play there in March. But it's felt like these two teams have been the better two teams in the Western Conference all year. Not that means they're going to make it to the Western Conference Finals, because anything can happen in the playoffs. But I would say that we are most likely on our way to a Lakers-Clippers Western Conference final. And if that's the case, I don't have a problem with it. I think, again, both teams, when they do have their full star power, it's meant to be a championship-type matchup. So I think it will be entertaining. And, it could very well show us where these teams are as we get set for the restart. Not that, they can't make changes down the line or, get better, get worse. We don't know if Anthony Davis is going to play tonight with the eye injury that he suffered. So there's some question marks around that. But for the most part, these are the two top teams in the West, and it should be a fun matchup to see in the second half of the doubleheader as the NBA season gets restarted tonight. But that is some of the news and notes from the Western Conference as they get set to restart their season. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will take a look at the Eastern Conference as there might not be as many teams involved. Plenty of action to watch in terms of the Eastern Conference. So we'll take a look at that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
The NBA has two conferences, in case you didn't know. Western Conference, which of course we just talked about, but now the Eastern Conference as well, getting ready for their restart. Not tonight, as both matchups include Western Conference teams. We'll have to wait for tomorrow to see some Eastern Conference teams in action. But even with the fact that there are only 9 teams of the 22 competing in the Eastern Conference, still plenty to watch out for. In the standings for the East, much like the West, the top 6 are locked into their playoff. Not into their playoff seedings, but they are locked into the playoffs already. Those, of course, being Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Miami, Indiana, and Philadelphia. Again, in that order as of right now. And there is a possibility of a play-in series that could happen in the Eastern Conference. Should the 9th seed, which is Washington, be within 4 games of the 8th seed, which currently is Brooklyn. No, I'm sorry. Brooklyn holding on to the 7th seed right now. Orlando is holding on to the 8th seed ahead of Washington in 9th. And really, there's more of a battle between Brooklyn holding on to the 7th seed with just a half game lead over Orlando, who has a 5.5 game lead on Washington. So while there's more teams in the Western Conference, the teams in the Eastern Conference are going to have a little more of a succinct race there, with essentially Brooklyn trying to hold off Orlando from taking that 7th seed from them, and then you would have Washington having to get at least a game and a half closer to either of those two teams, whoever is in 8th, to challenge for that play-in series. So, again... a lot to watch, not as much, but still a fair amount to watch there as we have some competition going on for that final seed in the Eastern Conference. And so, again, some questions now for the Eastern Conference, starting off with Philadelphia and whether or not this postseason is really a make-or-break postseason for Philly's young stars. And I would say not quite. It's been, disappointing from what Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons have kind of lacked there in Philly. There have been injury issues, obviously, along the way. But, the two stars just can't seem to get on the same page. And both kind of want to be the lead star there in Philly on the team. But I think the team would be better off if they could reach a point where they can both kind of carry those captain voices and really start to develop a future in Philly. If they can stop thinking along the lines of, oh, I want to be the guy that's number one on this team. I want the offense to flow through me. Instead, changing it to we, being Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, can help this offense flow, and we can help be the standout players on this team. Because it's kind of set up like New Orleans is. Because you have your star player there in Zion and a good supporting staff around him. They need that supporting staff there in Philly. For Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, if they can manage to get on the same page. If those two can't be on the same page and can't understand that they both need to really be the the leaders on that team, instead of one being a leader more than the other, they both need to approach this together. And if they can do that, then the focus becomes on the support staff. But if those two can't get on the same page, it really doesn't matter what the support staff is around them, because if those two aren't there and aren't mentally with it to lead that team and to be the those captain type voices, then it's not going to matter, because they're just not going to have that camaraderie, not going to have the chemistry to make a run through a tough Eastern Conference. So if they can make some kind of run in the East Finals this year, or maybe to the NBA Finals, and I think a lot of that talk dies down about the two of them and what might have to happen in terms of maybe one leaving the team or having to have some kind of real sit-down chat with the two of them about, you know, being a team captain and being a leader. Because I just don't feel like either of those guys has really taken a step towards that. I think that's what's kind of holding them back. It seems as though they kind of want to do it, yet they don't really want to do it. And, again, this team is going to be better off if the two of them can agree to lead this team as a duo instead of trying to be, you know, one of the only guy to stand out on that team. So, I mean, for Philadelphia, it's a very narrow line that they're walking right now with these young stars. Again, if they can pull themselves together and make some kind of a run to the Eastern Conference Finals, or even to maybe the NBA Finals, then fine. That will kind of calm down the conversation around them right now. But if they get knocked out in the first round, or if they get swept or lose in five games there in the second round, I think that's going to ignite a lot more questions than answers around this team. And it's going to, cause a fan base that's already been pretty restless to become even more restless with these two stars just not being able to perform and get Philly to the level that they're expected to get that team to. So I don't think this postseason is make or break for the young stars there in Philly, but I will say that this playoff, this postseason, could be a deciding factor on the direction this team goes in the future. If they don't have a very good postseason output, then I could see some big questions and really some big questions needing some big answers coming down the road a lot sooner than if they can make a deeper run into these playoffs. So we'll have to wait and see if they can get themselves on the same page, or if it's going to be a struggle for the 76ers through this season restart. Can the Heat make a run? Miami has been that team that's kind of been hanging around the top four there of the NBA season all season long. A team that has rested kind of on, not rested on Jimmy Butler, but counted on him to provide that spark. He has, but you also got guys like Bam Adebayo that have really risen up to star quality status this season. So I think the Heat can make a run. Jimmy Butler has talked about and been adamant about the bubble and how that can feed into the culture around the Miami Heat. And I think Butler himself is ready to really show the team the leader he can be. I think he's been dying for a position where he can step up and be that lone guy for a team. And now he finally has that opportunity in Miami. And this is a Heat team that's, like I said, been in the mix all season long. And they have an opportunity to show a talented conference what they're made of. And that flow will go through Jimmy Butler. But again, I think he's ready to handle that, and he's ready to take on that responsibility for this team and possibly lead him through, again, what is a tough Eastern Conference. But I think, again, with guys like Bam Adebayo and Iguodala on that team, you don't lose sight of the Heat. They've fluctuated kind of between third, fourth, and fifth at times this year, but they've hung in there, and they don't seem to be a team that goes away easily. And when it comes down to the NBA playoffs and just, grinding out games all the way through the end of the fourth quarter, I think Miami Heat could absolutely do that. And I would not be surprised if Jimmy Butler explodes even more into a star player during this restart. And I'm excited to see what that Heat team can really do and where they can go from here, because they're, it's not wide open in the East, but just because you're not Milwaukee doesn't mean you don't have a chance. So I think if Miami can really focus on, Jimmy Butler leading that offense and working that flow through him and let that go throughout the team, this is going to be a dangerous Miami team as we get into the restart and into the playoffs. Another big question, though, is what are the Pacers going to look like? Because there's a lot of questions around who will actually be on the floor and if this team is going to look like a shell of a team they really could have been. We know that Domantas Sabonis will miss most of, if not all, of the season restart battling a broken foot. But the team is also waiting on Victor Oladipo to decide whether or not he'll play this season. Obviously, having Oladipo on the floor would make a difference for Indiana, but enough of a difference. I mean, you're going to miss that inside presence with Sabonis being out, and we don't know exactly where on the, you know, full health meter Victor Oladipo is going to be. And, you know, I think, again, having him out there would make some kind of difference for Indiana, but if he's not 100%, if he can't push himself to the limit like you have to do when it comes to the postseason, and he doesn't have that inside presence of Sabonis down there, it would be a tough team for him to really lead. And I don't know if it would be a possibility for them to really work that out. And, you know, they just haven't really had time to develop any chemistry during this regular season. That's been another problem for them. And not being able to do that, it's going to, you know, bring up some tough decisions for them, because really they got to decide how they want to handle four stars. You got Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis, but you also have Malcolm Brogdon and Miles Turner as well, and they just haven't played in significant minutes together this season. So for an Indiana team that, again, is not out of it in the East, but without Victor Oladipo out there, without that chemistry, even with Oladipo out there, without the chemistry that could have been built throughout this season, I just don't see him being able to compete with teams like a Boston or like a Milwaukee or like a Toronto, even though we don't know exactly the shape Milwaukee is going to be in either when they get to get going here in the season restart. But I think Indiana is, like I said, going to look like kind of a shell of a team they could have been. And, you know, had Oladipo and Sabonis been healthy and out there on the floor, they may have been able to put a run together, but I don't think this was going to be the Pacers' year anyway. So hopefully they can figure out what to do with their four stars there in Indiana, get their guys healthy, and maybe make a solid run at it next year for Indiana. But I don't see a whole lot coming from them this season. And then one more kind of Eastern Conference question. Can the Raptors repeat? Can Toronto do it again? And I'm just a positive guy today because, yes, I think they can. You know, I think this is a team that was expected to drop off without Kawhi Leonard, and they really haven't done that. And now with a healthy rotation, Toronto can kind of set themselves up for, I think, definitely a repeat or at least a run to the finals again. It's not going to be easy, likely having to play the Celtics in the second round if everything stays the way they are, and, of course, the threat of Milwaukee there in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I'm not going to count out Toronto, and I don't think anybody should, especially as we get closer to the playoffs starting, because if they can stay healthy and get into a rhythm, they're a very, very dangerous team. And again, even without Kawhi Leonard, even without Danny Green out there, they have guys that have stepped up and you know, leading the way and making this team. You know, Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, all those guys that continue to make this team a threat in the Eastern Conference. Pascal Siakam as well. So I think Toronto can repeat. I think they are in a good position to do so. And, I mean, the Eastern Conference, again, not as many teams participating, but still plenty of action to watch. And I can't wait to see how a lot of these teams, you know, especially teams like Toronto, Boston, and Miami kind of shuffle themselves around possibly here in the start of the regular season, or restart of the regular season. So I think a lot of fun stuff to watch there in the NBA. But then I saw this question pop up, and I've seen a few people comment on it and talk about it on social media. But should the NBA have taken the 16 best teams? I thought that was an interesting question. Initially, my thought was yes. They should have taken the best 16 teams. Do what the NHL did. Jump into your playoffs when you get back. Don't take a risk of trying to get the season finished. Jump into the playoffs. Take your 1-16 best teams and let them play it out. Initially, I couldn't have agreed more with that. But then I thought about it more and more, and I kind of settled on no. No, I don't think they should have taken the 16 best teams, because that's not what the NBA is. I mean, even though the NHL is changing, you know, everyone's changing the way they're doing their season this year or postseason this year, I think the NBA did it right. I think they looked at the situation they had and said it wouldn't be fair to take these teams that are chasing a playoff spot and not give them a chance to be in the playoffs. Even if you take the best 16, some of those teams in the Western Conference obviously still aren't going to be in that 16-team field. So instead of trying to just put together the 16-team tournament and making, you know, the best of a bad situation that way. They went down the line of trying to give us as basketball fans the most complete season they could. Play out the rest of the regular season. We're still going to have our regulation playoffs, but if we need to, we can have a play-in game. So I think the NBA handled this about as well as they could have. They've handled their bubble atmosphere correctly, and I think having all of these teams down there getting ready to restart the regular season was the right way to go. I can see the intrigue in having the 16 best teams there and having them battle it out and not worrying about getting the playoff, the season restarted, or having your, you know, 8-8 from the Western and Eastern Conference. But that's what the NBA playoffs have been, and even though the NHL are expanding theirs a little bit, it's still, you know, you're still working your way towards that 16 team, you know, regulation playoff format in the NHL. So I think the NBA doing that was the right decision. You know, give basketball fans as much basketball as you can give them, and then have your playoffs play out and try to return to that bit of normalcy. Try to return to those formats, that sight, those sounds that we're used to hearing, and seeing the regular season, you know, finish its way out and having your Western and Eastern Conference playoff teams is that normalcy that I think sports fans will appreciate as we get into the postseason for the NBA. So I was really going back and forth on that one all day today, but I think the correct decision was made by the NBA in going to the format they have chosen to go with. So looking forward to that. Again, kicking off tonight with a doubleheader, and can't wait for basketball to come back. I really am. I'm just giddy just thinking about it, but can't wait to see that on the court tonight. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, the first week of the MLB season is in the books. Hard to believe that it started a week ago already. But we will talk about standings, stat leaders, also just thoughts on the first week of the MLB season. That's all coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. News on Zion Williamson coming up, obviously with the game tonight. Malika Andrews reporting that Zion Williamson will play in short bursts tonight against the Jazz. So he will be obviously limited in play, but he will be out there, which is a good thing for New Orleans. All right, that's enough about basketball for right now, though. Let's get into baseball, as we are officially starting the second week of the season. And the first week, you could call it a mixed bag, really. Because we got the season started on Thursday, last Thursday. And it was, again, we had the Yankees and National game, which only went about 5.5-6 innings before it got rained out. And then, you know, we seem to get through the weekend. Everything seems to be okay. And then, boom, we get to Monday, and everything with Miami starts to happen. And the Marlins, I mean, that just continues to get worse and worse, as now 17 players and two staffers for a total of 19 people there for the Miami Marlins organization now has tested positive for COVID-19. And although we had talked earlier in the week, too, about how Philadelphia, just coming off a series against Miami, looked to have dodged that bullet and you know, not caught COVID-19, but we all spoke too soon. As a member of the coaching staff, member of the support staff there in Philadelphia, two positive tests have shown up. So their series coming up against the Blue Jays this weekend has been postponed as well. So throughout this first week, we've had, I mean, fun and exciting games still. And something else that's come to our attention this first week is the new extra innings rule. That's you know, come into a play in a few different games. It's the rule that AAA tried out the last few seasons, where as soon as you get to the 10th inning, whoever made the last out for the team coming up to bat starts the inning on second base. And While I think there was a lot of people in the world of Major League Baseball that didn't want to see that rule come into the majors, I think since it has this season, it's been incredibly fun to watch. I've been a fan of this rule. I think that when you have a regular season, that's typically the length that baseball has, you need to find a way to make sure everyone can stay healthy and stay, you know, in shape enough and not get beaten down too much to survive this whole season. And when you get into extra innings, the fact that can just go and go and go, you need to give teams essentially an option to, you know, end within a timely manner, not just for fans, but again, for the health of these players as well. So watching this new extra innings rule is a lot of fun. And I think the biggest counter, I guess, or counterpoint to people saying that this new rule is a good rule is that, oh, all you have to do is put on a sacrifice bunt and a sacrifice fly and boom, the guy's in. And I think, what was it? Was it Kansas City? I think Kansas City was the first team that I saw actually do that. Kansas City, I think Cleveland went to extra innings one day over this past weekend. And Kansas City, it was the first time working the boards for Reno Aces games, you saw teams attempt to do it, but no one was able to send two batters up to the plate, you know, boom, boom, get your sack bunt, sack fly, and get a guy home. Very rarely did that happen in AAA, at least in the Aces games. And in Major League Baseball, again, that was the first time that I had seen any team send up their first two batters of the inning and get that done. But you know what that showed us? That's not necessarily the best strategy for extra innings. Because if you do that, yeah, you get one run across, but you also have two outs. And so you set yourself up now with two outs and the base is empty. If you go up there to swing, not only could you get that runner in off second base with your first at bat, but then you can also have the next guy on base to continue, you know, piling up runs there in extra innings. And if that's the way you decide to go, doing your sack bunt, sack fly, you get that one run in, I step up in the bottom half of the inning and hit a home run, boom, that's two runs, game over. So even though that seems like a quick way to get one run doesn't seem to be able to do it in extra innings with this rule. So I think it's becoming more challenging than people think, and it's becoming more intriguing than people thought it would be. And I hope that when we move on past this MLB season into the next, if we go back to that 162-game format, I hope they keep that for the regular season. I want to make that very clear. I think when you get to the postseason, you got to play regulation till you have a winner. But for the regular season, I am A-OK having that extra inning rule in effect. So hopefully we get to see more of that. And hopefully it continues to be as exciting as it is. But we are 1 week in, so let's take a look at the standings. Obviously, everyone not playing too many games yet, just about five or six for most teams. But in the American League East, you do have the Yankees and the Rays there as the top two teams. And then Toronto, Baltimore a game back, Boston two games back. Minnesota leading the Central Division there by a half a game over Cleveland and Detroit. You have Houston and Oakland, each with a half-game lead over Texas there in the AL West. Not really too many surprises through that first week there in the American League East. Toronto actually playing better than I thought they would out there in the AL East. And bummer to see that Chicago is struggling. The White Sox are struggling as much as they were. I was kind of hoping on them. I mean, obviously, there's a long way to go in the season if they continue playing. But that was kind of the one bummer based on the predictions I had made to see Chicago there in last place. Then we get to the National League, and the Marlins, of course, leading the NL East. That's because they've played three games and they're 2-1, so that win percentage is pretty high. But they have a half a game lead there on Atlanta and the New York Mets. Central Division, you have the Chicago Cubs with a one game lead on Milwaukee. And then the NL West, you have Colorado with a half game lead on the Dodgers and the Padres. Again, not everyone playing a ton of games right now, and a lot of games. Not a lot, but a handful of games getting postponed right now as well. So obviously a long way to go there in the standings, but those are kind of your division leaders for right now. And that question is there. Will they finish the season off? With this outbreak now with Miami and now it affecting Philadelphia, will Major League Baseball actually finish this season? And I really don't know. It doesn't feel like they're going to. It really doesn't. And when it was just the Marlins, I mean, it looked bad still. But again, when it's that one team, it seems a little more manageable. And you know, then it spreads to two teams, and it gives you a little more of an uneasy feeling. It's just two tests right now that came back positive for Philadelphia, so it's nowhere near the 19 infected for Miami. But still, it doesn't look good, and it doesn't really feel good for baseball. It was already kind of an odd feeling. I mean, it was still great to have the game back, and it still is. I still enjoy watching baseball pretty much every day since its return. But now seeing this outbreak and seeing that it's reached a second team, you know, we've had two series postponed. A couple teams have had their schedule kind of flip-flop now because of those postponements. So I talked about it earlier this week. Right now, you have some leeway. That's fine as we get into August. And towards the end of August, if it's still the case, I just don't know. And if they can make it through August, I think they'll finish the season. But if they can't, yeah, and really I think it'll be about midway through August we'll really know. When we see how Miami bounces back and we see if anybody else unfortunately maybe contracted the virus, if any other team has, then I would say by mid-August, we could know whether or not this season's going to be completed. And again, I don't think this was the right year to really try an expanded playoffs either, but even though I'm excited for more playoff teams in baseball, but again, with this kind of outbreak, it just makes you nervous that they're not going to have enough time and, you know, whether to make up games or reschedule games or get through their playoffs or whatever. It just feels like somehow, some way, they're not going to have enough time to really finish out this season. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope we get a full and as full as we can of a Major League Baseball season this year, just playing 60 games. But it definitely doesn't feel as possible as it did even a week ago. Even when the season got going again, it still felt a little weird. But at least we saw it happening. There were no, you know, you had Juan Soto step out, you know, because of a positive test before opening day. But even with that, it didn't feel like, you know, a huge happening. It's like, oh my gosh, Juan Soto's now gone. The season's going to be over. It didn't feel like that. But now you've had Soto had to step out. You have essentially almost the whole Marlins team having to step out. Now you have two cases there in Philadelphia. It just makes you worried with the continued travel between these venues and between these cities for these teams. It makes you nervous that they're not going to be able to finish this season off. So we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, that's all we can do is wait and see and you know, see how the season ends up and how it continues to go. But it's not a good feeling for the world of baseball right now. But let's take a quick look at some stat leaders. Again, batting average. Miguel Rojas for Miami's played three games, so he's got the benefit of that, but he is hitting .700 right now. So if Miami does get back to work this season, I guess we'll see. Because that's something else that myself and our pal Rick here at the studio were talking about. If they do call this season, let's say they get to a point where they can't finish it, do they just wipe out the stats this year? And there have been, you know, a few milestones already. Are they just going to wipe those out? It's a big question, because I mean, Miguel Rojas hitting .700, if Miami's season gets called, that's technically his average for the three-game season they played this year. What happens to that? Are you going to have to, maybe they, you know, you have to play at least 10 games or something like that for your numbers to count? I'm not sure, but that's another question. How long do you go before, if the season does get called off, do you count these stats? How long do you have to go in terms, you know, for that to happen? That was something that Rick and I were talking about earlier, and honestly, if you call the season at any point, I don't know how you could hold on to those numbers for a season that didn't get completed. Even if it's a shortened 60-game season, if a season's not completed in the books, I don't know how you can count those numbers. But nonetheless, Miguel Rojas, your leader in batting average with .700. Nelson Cruz, Anthony Rizzo, Colin Moran, and Jacoby Jones all have three home runs so far this season. Nelson Cruz leading the way with 11 RBIs for Minnesota. Kyle Lewis for Seattle with 11 hits, leading Major League Baseball. And then Tommy Pham in San Diego, 4 stolen bases, also leading leading Major League Baseball in that category. Some pitching leaders in wins. You have Sonny Gray, Garrett Cole, Burt Smith, and Adam Clark, who have all won 2 games this season. You also have Rich Hill and Shane Bieber, who have both have a 0.00 ERA for Minnesota and Cleveland, respectively. Joe Jimenez of Detroit, leading the way in saves, has 4 saves already. Max Scherzer for Washington, 21 strikeouts, leading the MLB there. And Lance Lynn and Sonny Gray each having two quality starts and leading Major League Baseball in that category for the start of the season. So that's a standings update, some stats update, and some takeaways there from the first week of play. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show here on this Thursday here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Welcome back to the show. Before we sign off here, let's take a quick look at a few events that happened on this day in sports history. Let's go back to 1930. On this day in 1930, the first FIFA World Cup final takes place at Estadio Centenario in Uruguay as the hosts Uruguay beat Argentina 4-2 in the inaugural event's final. Another FIFA World Cup final happened on this day in 1966 at Wembley Stadium. England beats West Germany 4-2 after extra time and is still the only World Cup win for England, World Cup championship in England's history. And then also on this day in 1996, Tommy Lasorda retires as LA Dodgers manager. But those are some events that happened on this day in sports history. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Tomorrow is Friday, which means I'll be on the air at 1 o'clock. It's our special two-hour Friday show. Our pal Terry will join us. Our pal Rick will join us. We'll have some fun stuff to talk about. Of course, we'll take a look at NBA opening night. Take a look at NHL as well. So a lot of good stuff to talk about tomorrow. So tune in. Like I said, at 1 o'clock, you can follow me on Twitter at My2Spenceworth. Catch up with some podcast versions of the show at the Spencer Wilson Show page on SportsReno.com. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow at 1. Peace.